Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
We get ready for the college football weekend, both nationally and in the Pac-12. So we wanted to bring on our guy, Bill Conley, SB Nation national college football writer. He's on Twitter at SBN_BillC, and you can catch his work at SBNation.com in the college football section. Does a great job, and he joins us now. Thanks for joining the show here in Portland, Bill. We always appreciate when you give us the time. Let's start with the national college football landscape, because there's one game that really has our eye, and that's kind of the point spread and the feel of Ohio State and TCU. It's 12.5, and some people are wondering if the speed of TCU can keep up with what Ohio State is. How do you feel about that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I have it pretty comfortably for Ohio State just because my numbers love Ohio State. But I really am curious what TCU can do just to kind of confuse Dwayne Haskins. This is obviously going to be his toughest full game test anyway. And you know, we've seen plenty of times where a young quarterback can get baited into making a lot of mistakes against the Gary Patterson defense. I don't trust TCU's offense to move the ball enough to keep it a game for four quarters, but this is kind of a, you know, just measure the like the time it takes Ohio State to put this thing away, and that might be able to tell us something.
You know, one of the other big games this weekend I'm looking at, and I'm just kind of wondering what we have at each team, and that's Auburn and LSU. And Auburn and a team, obviously they have a quality win over Washington in their opener, but Washington was knocking on the door the entire game. You can argue maybe they were even the better team for four quarters. And then LSU with a great win over Miami, and then they struggled last week against a Baylor School for the Blind kind of program. So what do we have in LSU and Auburn? How you feel about that one?
I mean, Auburn's battle-tested. That's one thing you can absolutely say, even going back to last year. I mean, they've been in a lot of these games. They play more of these games than anybody else, it seems. But it does feel like LSU still has a little more to prove here, and maybe that's just fine. I mean, maybe they've done what they needed to running the ball. They force more turnover opportunities than anybody in the country, pretty much. They're very much a Dave Aranda defense, and so that'll get you pretty far. But I think they've kind of obviously played things close to the vest when it comes to the passing game because they haven't needed it. They were up so quickly on Miami. They obviously didn't need it last week. So I think that's going to tell the tale here. I think Auburn's a pretty proven commodity at this point, and we're just waiting to see what LSU has to offer, if they can match Auburn or if they're still a step or so behind.
You know, I noticed, Bill, that you were touching on coach effect in, I believe it was your last podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because LSU clearly has just a lot of talent. We're wondering about Joe Burrow, if he's going to get better than 50% completion percentage at some point this year. But we know that LSU has the talent to do it. I'm just hesitant because I can't trust Ed Orgeron. How do you come to a conclusion with coach effect and how you view guys?
Well, I think with that, I mean, obviously we haven't had much of a sample size, at least not lately, to figure out anything specific about Edo and coaching effects and whatnot. I do think this year, you know, he to get the job, he promised to make big, bold coordinator hires. And you know, he kept Dave Aranda, which made a lot of sense, but then he went out and got Matt Canada, who wasn't a fit with him at all, but who he kind of felt he needed to get the job. The one thing I think we can say about Steve Ensminger is that he and Edo are of the same mindset. So I think it's going to be the most comfortable style for Orgeron to play, and when you're kind of being true to yourself, you tend to know how to manage a game a little better. So he's got that going for him. I just don't know, you know, if they're going to be a couple of years ago when Ensminger took over as offensive coordinator midseason, and Orgeron was the interim head coach. We saw them really kind of establishing a nice physical brand of football that worked really well against like the two really good defenses they played, and then they didn't really have a plan B. They didn't have any sort of extra things to offer those really good defenses. Now we get to find out if they've figured some things out in that regard, because Auburn is a very good defense.
Well, on top of that, too, I saw there's a petition to get rid of their live Tiger mascot.
Yeah, you know, you know, this world sometimes, you know, it's pretty tough to. No, I love it just because it's so different. But I mean, yeah. I can understand the argument a little bit.
Yeah, you're losing an intimidation factor there.
That's right. It intimidated Bear Bryant. Nothing intimidated Bear Bryant but that.
They got a damn tiger on their sideline.
Can you imagine if they went like Wizard of Oz and they put a guy in a costume, painted his face, and he was
the
growling
tiger
on the sideline
in the cage.
Yeah. That's. It's a guy named Mike. It's like, that's not doing the same thing.
You're not fooling anybody. One of the big games last weekend, it ended up being a ton of fun to watch, is that Texas A&M and Clemson game. And I think there's interesting stories coming out of it for both programs. But I'll start with Clemson, the winner. How do you think they're handling this quarterback situation? How should they handle it? And who, I mean, I guess who should be the starting quarterback for Clemson?
Well, I think they're going to hold off as long as possible. I mean, I think we know where it's headed eventually, and that, you know, Hunter Lawrence is going to start looking better and better. At least that's the goal here. And then you can kind of hand the reins over to him. I mean, I think overall they handled it. I guess you could say they handled it fine because they won a big road game with that arrangement. And I mean, Kelly Bryant, they got super predictable at the end, and that's kind of. That's one of the things that frustrates me most about Clemson is they really do. I mean, they've got the knockout punch lined up, and then they're like, yeah, we'll just go to the scorecards with it. And then they just jab the rest of the fight, and they run out the clock. And sometimes that lets teams back in the door. We saw that a couple times each of the last couple of years where they did that, and a couple times it really backfired on them. So, you know, I think overall that when they thought they needed to score, they did a good job of scoring, so that's probably a good sign. But it is a situation that's going to get more and more awkward as Lawrence starts to look better and better.
Yeah, we're talking with Bill Conley, SB Nation, national college football writer. He's on Twitter at @SBN_BillC is where you can find him. You know, a pretty big non-conference matchup that's kind of flying under the radar is Oklahoma State and Boise State. And I want to see what Boise State can do on the road against Gundy. And I also want to ask kind of a two-parter. One, your feeling on that matchup. And then two, I know this is their big non-conference. Can this non-Power 5... if they beat Oklahoma State, would they have a pretty good argument to be in it if they can run the table?
Yeah, I mean, this is the game I think I'm most excited about this weekend, just from a pure enjoyment standpoint. It should be a lot of fun. You've got two of the most fun teams in the country. Boise State's playing, in a two-game sample anyway, they're playing as well as they have since about 2011. It's one thing to defeat bad teams. It's another one to completely humiliate them in every possible way. And in Troy's case, they did it in their building. But I'm very curious to see what they have to offer. Oklahoma State's very fast. Obviously, they don't have as much experience as they did last year, but they're still very fast offense overall. They've got a more sound defensive scheme now. I think that's going to be a really interesting game. As far as the playoff thing goes, I mean, I think the only way a G5 team ever gets in the playoff is with like a multi-year run, like what it seemed for a second Houston might have a couple of years ago, where they go, you know, 13-1 or whatever it was. They have Oklahoma and Louisville lined up the next year. If they can run the table there, then they have that kind of clout built in, and it's a super unfair arrangement, and I'm not even completely sure that would work. I think the committee has shown that basically no matter how impressive you are in September, if you're playing New Mexico in November, you're going to get punished for it, and that's very, very frustrating. But we're gonna see. At the very least, Boise State does have a pedigree, even if they're not as good as they were a few years ago. Even if they haven't been as good for a little while, even if they've only been merely like good G5 good the last few years, they still have that name, and if they can go out, and especially if they can beat Oklahoma State by like 14 points and then run the table, maybe circumstances break for them. I'm never going to be hopeful when it comes to the G5 team.
If they do win that game that way and they do run the table, would Bill Conley think that they should be in the playoff?
I mean, I don't see why not. I was okay with the thought of UCF not making it in last year because of the qualifications of the other teams. I was very frustrated that they were 10th or whatever. They should have been about 6th. And so a lot of this will depend on the qualifications of the other teams, obviously. But they're going to have a case to make, especially if they score a big road game, especially if they continue beating everybody else by like 40 points. I think they'll have proven as much as UCF did and probably even more.
Does Florida State suck? Does Willie Taggart suck at coaching? Like, what the hell? How do we quantify what's going on in Tallahassee?
I think the one thing we can definitely quantify is that their offensive line is terrible at the moment. SB Nation's Bud Elliott, a coworker of mine for a long time, he runs the Florida State site for SB Nation, and he said before the season, like, basically the weakness on this team is offensive tackle. If a guy gets hurt, then they're in serious trouble there. Then, like, immediately a guy got hurt. Another guy kind of flamed out a little bit and has been massively underachieving, and suddenly they can't block anybody. So it's funny how, you know, there aren't any good plays to call when your line's getting blown up. It's hard for a quarterback to make good reads when his line is getting blown up, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. And that's, I'm not worried about the defense. I'm not necessarily worried about Francois, but until they can block, it's going to be hard to win games.
Did you like that hire by them to get Taggart?
I thought so. I mean, obviously it's one of those things where you look at his career record and you can scratch your head if you really want to, but seeing the job he did in making something out of nothing at Western Kentucky, seeing him turn things around and really kind of establish a really fun offensive identity at USF, and then, you know, I thought he did perfectly fine at Oregon last year, right up until the point where Justin Herbert got hurt anyway. And so, I mean, I think he proved enough to earn that job, and I think it could look really good on him, you know, establishing fun and speed and tempo at Florida State again. It sounds great, but yeah, he's got to get some linemen first.
All right, we're talking with Bill Conley, SB Nation national college football writer. He has agreed to hang out with us for one more segment, and we're going to dive into the Pac-12 weekend and probably hear the horrible truth that the Pac-12 is just no good from Bill Conley. We'll do that next. Bill, thank you for hanging around, and we'll be with Bill Conley next in just a couple minutes. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. Sprague here on the Fan. We're talking some college football with Bill Conley of SBNation.com on Twitter at SBN_Bill. C is where you can find him. He breaks down everything, has an incredible formula to dictate and show who the favorites are every single week. You can find that at SBNation.com on the college football page. And he's agreed to hang around for this segment as well. Let's go to the Pac-12 slate. And this isn't necessarily a big game, but it is of some interest to us up here because Chip Kelly down at UCLA and seeing what he can do in year one. He suffers an injury against Cincinnati. They fall. They get clobbered last weekend against Oklahoma. Now they're at home against Fresno State. Kind of curious because Fresno State's one of those G5 teams that seem to give a lot of people trouble, especially with their quarterback coach situation right now. How do you feel about what Chip Kelly has going for him this weekend and just kind of where the direction the Bruins are or it's headed right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's a shaky situation when your first start for Dorian Thompson-Robinson is at Oklahoma. That was obviously kind of doomed to failure, but I thought what we saw in that game were, you know, a few possessions there where we at least saw what he was going to have to offer soon. And I think right now it's just kind of a race against the clock. Like, how quickly can they start building momentum? Their biggest problem this weekend isn't necessarily them. It's that they're playing a really good Fresno State team, top 40 caliber team. And if they lose, that's why. You know, Fresno really seems to have its act together under Jeff Tedford. And you know, it's not clear that UCLA is going to be able to move the ball pretty consistently just yet. They should be able to make a few more stops than they did against Oklahoma. But, you know, that offense is probably not going to be quite ready. So if they win this, it's going to be kind of a sense of any type of, you know, 22-20 or something kind of game. They're not probably ready to explode just yet.
You know, the showdown in the conference this weekend is Washington and Utah, and granted, that's a tough place to play. It's a night game. Weird things can happen in Pac-12 after dark, but Utah's offense has looked horrible to start the season so far, two games in. What are you thinking about the Huskies and the Utes this weekend?
Well, I think, first of all, we know that Kyle Whittingham likes playing against Washington. He's done, you know, they nearly took down Washington the last couple of years, so they're not going to exactly be, you know, cowering or anything when Washington shows up. But I do think, I really like Utah's offense. I think this is the best offense. This is starting to look like the best offense they've had in a while, and I'm willing to overlook last week's offensive struggles because I think Northern Illinois' defense is actually really good. It's been good a couple of weeks in a row, and I think that explains at least a little bit of it. But I mean, this is still a pretty inefficient offense. There's no question about that. But they can make this a slog. They can play. So far, they've played among the best defense in the country, albeit against not great opponents. And they can really make life tough for Jake Browning. So I think, you know, I would pick Washington because Washington's the better team. But it's not. They're not that much better. Utah's got a real solid shot, I think.
So 6.5 points better, do you think?
I mean, anything in that 4-7 range feels pretty good. You know, if you want to, let's see, what do the numbers say specifically on this game? Right now I have 20-15 for Washington. So, the under sounds pretty good there, but I'm not sure. That line's pretty close.
You know, Bill, first of all, you just killed us, and I'll tell you why a little later in this segment. I do want to ask your opinion. We had you on during the summer. You wrote a thing on Jake Browning, or no, you were defending him on Twitter, because people were just killing Jake Browning. And you're like, he's a good quarterback, but people think he should be this next level guy. Well, they lose Auburn, and they looked a little at times against North Dakota. And now people are wondering in Husky Nation about Jake Browning. How have you changed your feelings on him?
You know, all I can say is there are about 150 fan bases in the country that would love to have Jake Browning show up on their roster all of a sudden. I mean, this is it really is the JT Barrett effect, where if you show a certain level as a freshman and then you don't proceed to improve and improve and improve and win a Heisman as a senior, we suddenly decide you stink, where it was really just his fault for setting the bar pretty high out of the gates and not necessarily having the highest ceiling in the world. But, you know, I think he made one really, really bad throw against Auburn. The other problem they had was just that they couldn't finish drives, and that's usually as much on the run game as it is on anything else. They created a ton of passing of scoring opportunities. They just couldn't finish, and I still like him. I think, you know, depending on your team, like I said, most teams would benefit from him showing up and suddenly being number one on the quarterback depth chart.
You know, here in Portland, just looking at the Ducks, we are so ready to just see them against an actual opponent. It's just, you never know what to take against a game like Portland State or Bowling Green. And again, we're going to have the same thing this weekend against San Jose State, who might actually be the worst of the three that they're playing in non-conference. So I'm going to go ahead and look ahead on the calendar. Oregon and Stanford, let's say they're playing tomorrow and Bryce Love is healthy. How is Bill feeling about that game?
Man, that's going to be good. I mean, Oregon's offense versus what looks to be a very, very good Stanford defense. That sounds like a lot of fun to me. It is. Stanford's offense is very, very – last year it was extremely inefficient. That was their big thing. They would go three and out a lot, and then Bryce Love would break off a couple 70-yard runs, and they'd, you know, get to 20-whatever points. This year they've been even less efficient, and Bryce Love hasn't had as many explosion opportunities, in part, at least partially because of injury. But, you know, obviously Arcega Whiteside is looking really good. Costello's doing a pretty good job. I think the passing game has improved, but they still have the same all-or-nothing tendency right now, and that makes them a volatile team. You know, I think we know what Oregon team will show up if you know, Justin Herbert and all that, but Stanford remains a kind of a wild card because from week to week, they could have one explosion and score about 7 points, or they could have about eight explosions and hit 40, and you just really never know with those teams that are so all or nothing.
Is Bill Conley buying into Herm Edwards and all the hype he's getting?
Not yet. Michigan, for one thing, I wasn't buying into Michigan State. And so I'm kind of in wait and see mode when it comes to figuring out exactly how impressed to be with that win last week. But I think the good thing is that over the next 2 weeks, we're going to get a lot of Arizona State questions answered. San Diego State doesn't appear to be quite as good this year as they were, but that's still going to be a really tricky defense in a pretty hostile environment. And of course, Washington next week, if they look good, if they beat San Diego State and they at least threaten Washington for a while, then we'll have to start thinking of them as a potential Pac-12 South contender, I think.
Well, let's hype up Oregon State fans a little bit. You have some metrics that are pretty optimistic about the Beavers. What is it about that team that is pointing them in the right direction?
Competence is... You know, they seem to have reached a competent state on offense. They're able to generate some big plays, which is something that hadn't necessarily been the case in recent years. Especially, you know, well, actually run and pass, they've done a good job of having those. You know, I was saying it's a bad thing that Stanford's all or nothing. It's kind of a good thing that Oregon State's all or nothing, because that means there are some alls. So I think they're headed in the right direction offensively. I was curious about the Jonathan Smith hire in general, because it just seemed to make so much sense for a Pacific Northwest team to try to get something off of the Chris Peterson tree, but that defense obviously is going to continue holding the back. It has so far, and it will probably continue to.
Can I get you out of here on this one, Bill? I know you're covering a little bit of the NFL as well, and I know you're really plugged into college football. So my co-host and I and three other coworkers, we made a 7-team parlay bet.
Oof.
I know. It's a cheap bet, but the payout is amazing. So
sure.
I'm going to give you who we picked, and I – yes or no if you agree on the pick, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. We'll start in the NFL. San Francisco -5 against the Lions.
Just based on last week, I would say that's a good pick.
Okay. Syracuse at home +4 against Willie Taggart.
Oof. Until Florida State can block, I'm going to say that's a good pick.
New Orleans at home against Cleveland -9.
Yeah, Cleveland probably can't score enough.
Rams at home against Arizona -13.
I get nervous anytime we get into the double digits with NFL lines, but yeah. Rams look really good late. So that one's tricky, but we'll say yes. We'll say yes.
This is the one we probably lose you. Oregon -41.5 against San Jose State.
If they want to. You know, that's kind of the bottom line. In those blowout spreads, I mean, it just kind of depends on when they decide to call off the dogs.
Okay, UW against Utah -6.5.
That one's tougher for me. I do think Utah's going to put up a heck of a fight.
And my co-host, by the way, is adamant that the Huskies will cover this one. So thank you okay. for saying that. And then last one, Kansas City at Pittsburgh, +5.
Yeah. Pittsburgh wasn't very efficient last week. Obviously, the weather had something to do with that, but I'm all for just betting it all on Kansas City until they give us a reason not to, because they're fun.
Sounds like you want in on our parlay next week.
You want
week.
In? We got, yeah.
You're green. I was trying to be nice, but I only really sort of half disagreed with a couple of them, so that's pretty good for a 35-piece parlay there.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Hey, that's right. Your metrics, you're hitting 57% thus far, so I'm just going to take that, and I'm going to assume you're going to give us 100% this weekend, and we will thank you when we hit the parlay. Thank you for the time, Bill. We always appreciate it. Continued success and good work at SB Nation.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Bill Conley, SBNation.com, national college football writer.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.